Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today is Buddy Frank, who's been a casino executive in slots and marketing for more than 25 years. Buddy Frank, welcome back to Gambling with an Edge.
Well, thanks for having me back. I enjoyed my time last time we spoke.
Yeah, the last time we spoke was for the January 19th show, and we only got through about half our questions. So, and we haven't, by the time we're taping this show, you haven't even heard the first one. So we're going to continue. And when our listeners hear the first two shows, if you agree with me that he's a heck of a guest and knowledgeable and interesting, send us some questions to ask him in the future, and we just might twist his arm and get him back on here again. If I'm learning new stuff about video poker from listening to this guy, there's a pretty good chance some of you are too. All right. We got an email at sent to us at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. He sent us a copy of the Young at Heart drawings at various Boyd properties. Young at Heart is their designation for senior citizens. Now, the rules make a big deal, Rule 23 particularly, about Boyd's right to exclude anybody that they deem to be an advantage player, which they go ahead and define reasonably as a player who is skilled or knowledgeable enough to use legal means to have an advantage. My personal take on this is it's boilerplate, similar to management reserves all rights and must be over 21 to play. This rule did not give them any right they didn't already have. There are paragraphs that a lot of casinos use in every one of their promotions, including must be over 21 to play and stuff like that, and then they just add the new stuff in the middle of whatever makes this promotion unique. I have seen wording like this in other casinos as well. And so anybody who's particularly surprised by this rule probably hasn't read a lot of rules at other casinos because it's in there regularly. Richard, were you surprised by any of this?
Well, I haven't played any promotions. Participated in any kind of promotions where I would be scrutinizing the rules in a very long time. So, no, it doesn't sound like it's really anything to be surprised by.
Okay.
Yeah.
Buddy Frank, you must have been part of the rule writing committee for innumerable promotions. Does the paragraph...
Yeah, I have been.
Do you have this kind of wording in your promotions, or have you seen it?
I have not seen this kind of wording, and again, it's kind of a catch-all because I think as I read this morning, and I was quite surprised, although not totally shocked because of some of the things I've seen with like the Phil Ivey decision recently where he followed the rules the casino told him, and he asked permission to do everything he did, and then later it was deemed to be an advantage to him and that they almost implied he cheated. I think the key thing with this is I agree with you, Bob. I think this is just a catch-all because, you'd have to go, is an advantage player a skilled or knowledgeable who finds ways to gain a mathematical advantage? Well, I believe anybody who plays video poker who knows more than, who's tried it once or twice is probably better than the player who's never tried it at all. But I think that word gain a mathematical advantage, I think they mean an advantage that's greater than the value of the promotion they offer. And I described yesterday many times when new or inexperienced marketing managers goof up and offer promotion that may benefit, quote, advantage players. And that would be a guy like you, Bob, who plays video poker better than most and therefore probably has a little bit better odds in your favor. And if they goof up, they might use that catch-all phrase to stop an advantage player from cleaning them out. But again, I think it's catch-all. I doubt a few people would do this unless they just made a hideous mistake in their math and wanted to use this as the thing to shut it all down. But I was surprised. I'd never seen this kind of wording before.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is I can also see them trying to protect themselves from – you know, there are a lot of these kind of, really low level, I hesitate to even call them advantage players, but, you know, the kind of people who counterfeit coupons, you know, and things like that, who, you know, may come up with some kind of angle on the drawing that they want to protect themselves from.
Yeah, and I mentioned last time we spoke on the 19th about an example I had experienced almost 10, 15 years ago where a marketing department that wasn't sharp was offering 3% cash back. The equivalent today would probably be 3% easy play or free play. And while that would cover your average video poker players, it certainly wouldn't cover – you would lose money with an advantage player. So – it's probably just to protect them in case they did something really dumb like that or a catch-all. But again, the language is very imprecise. The bigger thing is we have the right to refuse service from anyone. You've heard that. In fact, most of the times when casinos restrict card counters and stuff, they don't cite a law, or in some instances, if they're poorly managed, they'll do pseudo arrest and stuff. But more than likely, they'll simply come up and say, you know, you're too good for us, and we simply don't want you to play with us anymore. So this is one of those phrases like that, I think, that just gives them, puts down some verbiage in case someone goes after them, sues them, or claims they can cite a law like this. Again, I wouldn't get too worried about it because it's not going to apply to the majority of players, even if you're a very good video poker player, unless the casino has made some sort of horrendous mistake.
This particular drawing is for the young at heart drawing, is you're basically limited to playing $10,000 coin in on the day. And you're not limited, but that's all your special multipliers go. And so you're limited in the amount of tickets. The drawing itself is very small EV. And so if they did kick you out, it's not that big of a deal. There are players who worried about what if they played first and were planning on being in the drawing and then the casino kicked them out. And on this particular drawing, it's no big deal because your EV was only, you know, in the fives and tens of dollars expected value anyway, although you can get mad about that if that'll make you feel better. There have been some cases where casinos opened up and players played several hundreds of thousand dollars earning drawing tickets and were kicked out before the drawing. They were there on an offer and were kicked out before the drawing, and that went to gaming. And at least some of them were settled in the player's favor. But this young at heart drawing is a really piddly drawing and not much to lose sleep over.
Right, you know, there's another important point both for players and operators to consider, and that's that when you look at promotions, especially drawing type of things, there's a law in Nevada, it's not in all states, but that a lottery is illegal in the state of Nevada. And what constitutes a lottery? Well, most legal experts say there's three things: chance, consideration, and prize. And oftentimes you'll see a drawing at a casino and says, if you play so much money, you can get a drawing entry. Well, everyone with any common sense would realize, hey, there's consideration there. I had to play the machine. That's my consideration. And if it's a random drawing, that's chance, and there's some sort of prize for the winner. So that would be a lottery and illegal. So in the fine print of these rules, there's usually somewhere in there that says, hey, you can get a free entry by doing this. And it's usually in the super smallest type you can possibly see and not advertised very much, but it must be in there so that they're not in violation of the lottery law. Well, again, they might define an advantage player as someone who really jumps on that and super good with a computer and decides to enter online hundreds of thousands of times to run the odds in their favor. So that little phrase is always in there. If you're looking at a promotion and want to do more entries, if you look somewhere in there, especially in Nevada, you'll find some claim in there that says you can get a free entry. Sometimes they limit once a week, once a day, once an hour, whatever, but there'll always be something in there to get a free entry. And I encourage players to take advantage of it. I encourage operators to make sure they limit how often you can enter, because with good computer techniques, you could really stack these rules in your favor.
And if they do get free entries and more than a few, I recommend all players who value their time to avoid those drawings because they're worthless. If you have,
yes, they are.
If so many people can get all these free entries that you would have to play $50,000 or $100,000 or $200,000 coin in to get, your play is just totally watered down that this drawing is worthless.
Well, that's the way some
people counter it. One free ticket a week, that's different.
Yep.
But
that's the other way that a lot of casinos will counter that, Bob, is what they'll do is if you're playing money play, you earn a lot more chances or at least more valuable chances than you do if you're doing the free entries. And again, you should limit those free entries and you should make the paid, quote, paid entries more valuable in some ways. But again, the reason they even do that with free is they're required by law. Otherwise, it's a lottery and it's illegal.
All right, let's move on. Indian casinos, Native American casinos, they frequently have Class 2 and Class 3 video poker machines. In simple terms, Buddy Frank, how are Class 2 machines different from Class 3 machines?
Well, you mentioned Indian casinos, and that's very, very important. When Congress, back in the late 80s, authorized casinos, they defined several forms of gaming. And the first one is called Class 1. Hardly anyone talks about that, but that's a social game that tribal members play among themselves. And if you go to things called powwows or these Indian cultural celebrations, these are little games they play among themselves, usually stick and ball games related back thousands of years where they guess what hand a stone is in or how many stones. That's social gaming amongst tribal members themselves, Class 1. Class 2 is the big one. And the history of Indian gaming is pretty much founded on the game of bingo. And so therefore, since bingo was so well established, Congress didn't want to upset that right, so they defined that as Class 2. It is called pool betting, meaning in bingo, in church kind of bingo or some other forms of bingo, you can, if you held it at your house, you could only win the amount of money that the players put in. And that was called Class 2 thing. Class 3 gaming, for the best definition of I ever heard, is it's Nevada gaming. It's the kind of gaming we're all used to. And there are certain rules about how the outcome is determined. The law almost has a specific exception that says you can't do electronic forms of Class 2 gaming. It must be bingo. Well, Indians looking for an advantage over... Oh, the other designation that's critical is that the states can't write any rules or tax Class 2 gaming. So Class 3 gaming is taxed pretty severely in many states. 25%, for example, in Connecticut, where Foxwoods and Mohican. In California, it varies, but it's in the 10 to 20% range of taxes. But if it's Class 2, there's no taxes. Same in Oklahoma. Well, because of that, the Indians explored, how can we make a slot machine based on these rules and not violate the law? And they came up with Class 2 gaming. The initial forms of it, it looks like a regular slot machine, but all the machines are hooked together to a central processor or server, and they do a bingo draw. So essentially, you're playing bingo on a bunch of machines. Well, to play one of these in the early days, it was really inconvenient. It wouldn't talk to the ticketing system. And if you were the only player playing, you couldn't play until someone else started playing, and then you could only win the amount of the other two players, and you were playing the game of bingo. Well, obviously, they weren't very popular. So a lot of the more advanced tribes got together, and they said, you know, we have to play bingo, But what if the outcome was shown on a real slot, or in the case you described, as a video poker thing? Meaning, if I had a bingo card that was a winner, why not associate that to a pair, or three of a kind, or a royal flush, for example? And they managed to get that legal. But the early machines, because the commissioner at the time for the Indian Gaming Regulatory Group ruled that, hey, you must daub, just like bingo, and what daub meant is you must push the button multiple times. And if you didn't daub, which they ruled is the same as in a bingo hall, you must yell bingo. I don't know if you know, but if you're in a bingo hall and you get a bingo but don't yell it, when they call the next ball, you're out of it. You've lost your turn. And so they required this daubing. So many people playing those early slots in video poker based on Class 2 did what they called slept the bingo, and they didn't win. Again, something else that made these machines horrendously unpopular. And then lastly, there was a rule that said the bingo screen has to be displayed very, very prominently. So you wanted to play video poker, but there's this huge bingo card doing all kinds of things you didn't understand. Well, Indians have fought quite successfully, and over the years, they've got those rules relaxed. One is you don't have to daub, quote, the machine multiple times. You just have to push the button once to play. Two, that the bingo screen that has to be displayed can be very, very, very small. And this allowed these machines, in many casinos today, you can go in, and I would defy most people who aren't aware to know that they are playing a bingo machine. It just looks like a regular slot machine, not so with a video poker, and I'll explain that in a minute. But it looks pretty similar to a regular machine. The other one, that deal about have to have another player playing before you could play, what they realize is, let's just not hook up to our casinos, but let's hook up to casinos all over the United States, and let's run hundreds of bingo games simultaneously. Well, that freed up the math, so no longer do you have to wait for just one other player, and no longer is there a very small pool of money so that when one guy wins, there's nothing left. So today's Class 2 machines essentially are all interconnected, both within the casino and to nationwide networks. Their math, because of multiple games going on at once, is very similar to the random number generator of an independent standalone machine. For a fast player, it's slightly slower. Now, I hope that was clear, because then I want to describe the very unique circumstances of video poker. Does that sound reasonable, Bob?
That was good, and I'm dying to hear what you say about video poker. Our audiences would be more video poker players than slot players, that's for sure.
Well, there are some video poker implementations of Class 2 out there, but in my mind, they're terrible. And here's why. The math isn't the same. In those Class 2 machines I described, I said there was a winning combination on the bingo card, and they translate that to a result, and that's the end of the game. Well, in video poker, there's actually two outcomes. What I mean by that is there's the outcome of the card you're dealt. And if you're lucky enough to get dealt a straight flush, more power to you. But more than likely, you didn't, and you have a second outcome when you hold or discard certain cards from the thing. And many Class 2 operators haven't figured that out. And they can't make a product. I know IGT has one. There's some variants in Bally. Some of the major Class 2 providers have tried it, and they're all really, really poor. Now, there is one new thing out there. Not many of your players will see it. Certainly you won't see it in Nevada. There is one Class 2 operator who actually is a bingo provider. The company is called Planet Bingo. They have figured out how to put all the possible combinations of cards into a bingo card pattern. And they have got a Class 2 bingo game that replicates video poker exactly. What I mean by that is they do both the first draw that's coming out, whatever cards you have, let's say you're dealt two of a kind, and then they also, off of that, figure out a variant for every single possible draw-hold combination. And they roll that all into one outcome of bingo. They use a much more complicated bingo card. That model It's very limited now, and it's only in a few bingo halls, but that model, if someone big like IGT picked it up, I think would make video poker feel decent on a Class 2 machine. But right now, I think most players, Bob, I don't know if you played one, but it's a very disappointing form of video poker, does not even feel right, and the pay tables are not that good. So Class 2 in poker is not viable right now. There's some companies exploring to make it better in the future, but right now it's not too good. On the slot side, real games and video games, Class 2, to me, is just as good as Class 3.
I don't remember the name of the company, but not so long ago, IGT had a separate division which just dealt with Indian gaming. Would you know what?
Yes, it was called SODAC originally.
Are they still there? Or are they still part of IGT? Do you have any idea?
They are. SODAC was, obviously the name implies they're out of South Dakota, which you may remember that was some of the initial Deadwood and a few others, some of the initial gaming activities there. And they started doing a lot of work in this Class 2 arena and other types of gaming product. IGT actually acquired that company wholly and absorbed it within their group. Since that time, they bought several other small Class 2 providers and rolled them into their fold. But all of the companies have struggled mightily with the concept of a good Class 2 video poker. Again, the reels and things are just about as good. Now, why even bother with Class 2? It's because of that tax reason. And you can imagine if I'm paying a 25% tax on my profit on a Class 3, and the Class 2 would work just as well, and I would pay zero, huge advantage for the casino operator, no real disadvantage for the player.
Now, are these Class 2 machines, are these the ones where the outcome is predetermined, and so if you're dealt a royal flush and you throw the cards away, it'll just deal you another one?
Pretty much. Like up in the flaw. That's the flaw in most Class 2 games. They just can handle one outcome. It's that one company I told you that's patented pretty good who has the ability to do it. I've been trying to get them to sell their stuff to IGT because I would love to see IGT's library of popular poker games run on that model. As a player, no difference. To the casino operator, all of a sudden they're going to like video poker a whole lot more and probably give you better products because instead of giving that 25% to the state or the local jurisdiction or 15%, they could give it back to you in looser poker products. So I think it'd be good for players if there was, in Indian country, if there was a viable Class 2 option.
So, and yeah. Those machines, the pay schedule does not reflect, because it's not based on a 52-card deck, the edge on the machine can be set to 10% or whatever, and you have no way of knowing the way you can in a Class 3 place where you can look at the video poker machine and know what the payback is.
The confusing part has more to do with that second outcome that messes it up. But in a way, you're right. It's not the odds, and it feels very different than a regular machine, because most people have struggled with how to handle that second decision. Bingo only has one outcome, not two, and they can't run a separate game. The randomness of bingo is, the math of a bingo card is surprisingly rich, meaning they can duplicate the randomness, and with good math, like I told you, by that one company, they can make it exactly the same odds as a 52-card deck. All the other companies, they've struggled, and because of that difficulty with the two outcomes, they've struggled. That's where you get that similar situation. You throw away one hand, you get it back, because there's already been an outcome before you make your decision on what to hold or not hold.
Right.
So
okay.
My recommendation to your players in the audience, forget Class 2 bingo for now. When some of these better forms get adopted, I may change my tune. But right now, it's a pretty weak product. And there's really no one out there who's really got much market share Class 2 bingo. Keno's a different story. Works very well on Class 2 video Keno. Real slots work very, very well on Class 2 Keno. There's a machine out there in Indian land that everybody, from a company called Rocket, called Gold Wheel. Very, very popular. Has a $1 million jackpot. That's a Class 2 machine that's very, very popular. And you'll see these California casinos, most of them have probably 5 to 10% class 2. There's one in Arizona that recently opened up. It's called the Glendale Casino. That's 100% class 2, and their revenues are on par. Their popularity and revenues are on par with any of the nearby class 2, class 3 only casinos in the Phoenix area. So class 2 can be a good product, just not now for video poker.
This question, it might be throwing you a curveball. We didn't prepare you for it, but I got a feeling you can handle it. In New York, the tribal casinos are generally considered to have fair video poker, and the racinos, which are the ones at the racetrack, have a type of video poker where everything is predetermined, and it's like, it could look like a 102% game, but it's actually a 93% game, and you can't really complain to anybody because it's the state of New York that's running it, and they're doing it to make their taxes better. Do you know anything about those machines?
I know a little bit. The state of New York has some unique laws. One of the most unique was one of the very first casinos, which the group I was with helped opened up, called Turning Stone. And Turning Stone essentially opened with table games only and no slot machines whatsoever. So they were forced to create a slot machine that wasn't a slot machine, that had different outcomes. And now their machines are getting more traditional and they're more alike. But they had to invent their own system that allowed you had to go buy credits ahead of time, and very complicated how they did it. The other ones in New York that you're referring to, essentially, they're running on a video lottery platform, which is very much like that bingo model I told you about. And they have the same exact problems that Class 2 operators have with video poker. They're restricted to that single outcome. And I don't know the details of that, Bob, but I know that, again, they struggle. And it is not true math that you would get with a 52 card. I'm sure you remind your players all the time that the beauty of video poker is that you can figure out everything, single thing you need to know about that video poker by looking at the pay table. Because the math on every single game, rare exceptions, and you know those, because they're all based on a 52-card random draw. And so the only really variable is the pay table. And you can buy one of your books or look up online anywhere, and you can see this pay table, it'll always have the same odds. I don't care where that casino is. That's in the Class 3 games. The Class 2s are different because they're calculated totally different.
All right.
And the video lottery calculation is similar to Class 2.
During our last show, we spoke about attorney Bob Nersessian's book, The Law for Gamblers. During that show, Buddy said he loved the book, recommended all our listeners get it, but he disagreed strongly with Nersessian's statement when Bob said Indian casinos have a license to steal. It's just that simple. I had some follow-up questions for Buddy, but then Richard had his own questions in another direction, and I never got a chance for my follow-ups. So now I have since forgiven Richard, and let's get to my follow-up now. I think Nersessian was talking more about table games and video poker, and I think he was talking about how difficult it is to sue Indian tribes, and sometimes even their employees. Surely you agree with Nersessian that suing tribes is a much tougher row to hoe than suing non-tribal casinos. Yes?
I do agree. I think one of the issues is the attorneys, meaning a lot of people don't specialize in Native American law. There's several good books out about it, but most attorneys you say, hey, I was in the casino and a giant sinkhole opened up and I fell down and injured myself. Any attorney in the world would pick that up. And then you say, yeah, it was at an Indian casino. And then they'll go, oh, never mind. Because they get hung up about a provision called sovereign immunity, meaning tribes are really treated like separate nations. It would be like you trying to sue France or Germany. And that stifles lots of attorneys. But because there's so much money involved, a lot of attorneys now specialize in Indian gaming. So your assessment is absolutely right. It's harder to sue Indian casinos. You made the point it's about harder to sue their employees. There's some new law that says employees do not necessarily get the same protection as tribal members. So that law is changing as we speak. But that sovereign immunity phrase really frustrates people. They can't always get discovery as well. You can't just present a subpoena to the tribe, just as you couldn't send a subpoena to Angela Merkel to tell her to turn over German records. So that makes it a bit more difficult to sue tribes. On the other hand, most of their new compacts have strong provisions in there about appointing independent arbitrators. In California, under the newest compacts, all gaming disputes have to go to an independent arbitrator, binding independent arbitrator, and that person is usually a retired justice or judge who's deemed agreeable. So the laws are getting a little bit better. Table games, I can't answer. I have heard horrendous stories about detention and some people call it imprisonment or whatever improperly on that. That's a little gray area. My argument yesterday was that the regulations on slots, how closely the regulations are followed, and how much the tribes default in the favor of the player specifically applied to slot machines. I can't speak with much authority, maybe Richard can, on the table game side.
Okay, thank you. Let's change subjects. Let's look at auto hold, where the machine makes the selections for you on your cards, where you can override it, but it has recommendations. Now, it's found on video poker machines at some casinos. Most machines have the auto hold option, which most casinos choose not to turn on. Now, I first saw auto hold on IGT machines about 20 years ago. It was at Barona in a casino near San Diego. And I was amazed at how bad the auto hold was. And jacks are better from a hand like 2, 4, 5, 6, 7, all mixed suits. You basically could choose the open-ended straight, 4, 5, 6, 7, where 8 cards could fill it in. Or you could choose the inside straight, 2, 4, 5, 6, where only half as many cards would fill it in. And the machine would always recommend the inside straight. Totally the wrong play. I came away with the impression that auto hold was invented to make players play faster and to teach players to play badly. It was a wonderful invention if you owned a casino. Now, auto hold is very good. I played auto hold at the Viejas casino, also in a different part of San Diego area. On their high limit machines, I had the 100% perfect strategy memorized, and never did I have to override the machine. Now, when Barona put in the new auto holds, their slot director later told me that the players rebelled. They liked the way the old one did it. They had learned the bad way to play. And when the machine was giving them the right way to play, they thought the machine was cheating them, and they resisted it. Eventually, they learned to accept it, although you still see players overriding the auto hold on a hand like a pair of kings, a pair of fives, and a four in double-double bonus. It's usually correct to hold two pairs. Like it's worth over a dollar if you're playing a dollar machine, the difference between holding the two pair versus the pair of kings. And you will regularly see players when dealt king, king, five, five, four, and machine says king, king, five, five, they will unhold the fives and just hold the pair of kings. So even though the auto hold is good, players are still bad. Now, Buddy Frank, as a consultant for slot directors.
You know, I want to back up and tell you about my opinions on auto hold, and one has to do with the very, very nature of video poker when it was first starting.
Okay.
In fact, I'll mention that I think it was the Washington Post or the New York Times that called video poker the crack cocaine of gaming. And I tried to understand early on why people even like video poker. And I'd love to hear your reason, Bob, about why you were attracted in the first place. But a lot of people claim that the beauty of video poker was that you felt like you were making a difference in the game. And that a real slot, it just, the outcome happened and you had no input other than luck and how lucky you were that day. But video poker, you had the feeling that you were contributing to it, and as you got better, that was a source of pride in that you were playing the game better. So my early thinking was, if I put auto hold on there, I've made it back into a slot machine. Granted, a little bit better pay table than a regular slot machine, but I'd made it into a boring slot machine. And when I visited Germany once and went in the Spielhauses there, I saw these real slot machines on the wall. I walked into the casino. There were no one playing them, but the machines appeared to be playing. So I went over to one and started to touch a button, and some guy ran out of the restaurant and stopped me, said he's got it on autoplay. He just put his money in, the machine plays itself, and then you come out to see if you win or lose. And to me, it just seemed ludicrous to not have any input to that game like that. I might as well just come to the front door and say, hey, did I win or lose? Here's my $20. How much did I give out? Sorry, you're broke or $5. And I went, you know, the beauty of video poker is that interaction. And I think most people who start their video poker career will agree they like that game better because there was some interaction. So my first opinion about auto hold would, it wasn't about whether the odds would be tighter or looser. It was that I'm going to ruin the game if I do auto hold because there's no interaction with the player. Then at one of the casinos I worked for, I either paid or simply got him a couple of beers so he would spill out the information, but Bob Dancer came by, and I asked him about auto hold. And I think it must have been about halfway between the two extremes you told me, Bob. You said, I would turn it on. And I went, well, why would you turn it on, Bob? I know you play, and you play almost as fast as auto hold. Why would you want auto hold? And at that time in your career, you told me because, one, I can play faster normally, but I also like the challenge of overriding it when it's wrong. I do not turn on auto hold in most casinos I work for. If anyone requested it, a high roller player, I'd certainly turn it on and then turn it back off because I didn't want to destroy that thing that I think many video pokers like of actually feeling part of the game. But I would certainly turn it on. The odds don't matter to me. It's like I was successful sometimes, Bob, in getting your seminars in my casinos, and other times I wasn't because general managers would say, why on earth would you want to educate your players so they play better? To me, the answer was obvious. A better player, I'm still over time going to get his expendable budget over time. He'll have a more enjoyable experience, be able to play longer for the same money if he's knowledgeable. In fact, if he's knowledgeable and having fun, he'll probably come back more often. So that's why I wanted educated players, and I feel that way today. But I thought auto hold was making the game boring. I'll turn it on if people want, but basically I'd prefer to keep it off. A somewhat similar answer about double down, but a little bit different.
You mean double up?
Double up, excuse me.
It could be called either way.
Well, I just want to say, you know, if I own the casino, I think that lessons are a really good idea because 90% of the people who come take the class are not going to learn. I mean, they're going to learn a little bit, but they're not going to become expert players. It's just like the number of people who read a blackjack book. You know, maybe one out of 1,000 actually becomes a competent card counter. But, you know, they read the book and they feel like they learned something. And, you know, so I absolutely would see the value in offering those classes. Because I'm sure that the majority of the players, right after the class, what are they going to do? They're going to go out and start playing video poker. So
sure. Your argument's exactly right. In fact, I use that in a lot of my thinking because I know in the early days my table games companions would want to throw out anyone who they remotely thought was card counting. And at the El Dorado, where I worked for a few years, they actually did one of the first automated table game system. It was called Mind Play. They later sold it to Bally, and it had some flaws. But what it did when it worked well was allow us to really evaluate play. And we saw that many of the people we thought were card counters weren't that good. And I think you'll testify to that, Richard. There are some who are good, but the most of them weren't. And we were actually throwing out very good players because we thought they looked like card counters or they were demonstrating, but overall they weren't. So I learned early on that you can't always take appearances, and I learned that some of the things like being advantage players makes a difference. I teach to the staffs in the casinos I work a little module about video poker. And in that module, I use Bob's program, Video Poker for Winner, and I show a couple of hands that are quite obscure. And I put them up, and I say, what would you hold? And they give me one answer. It's usually wrong. And then I show them how the Video Poker for Winners calculates and shows them that they made the wrong call. Then I show them a very similar hand that actually is quite different. And I show the slight odds difference, and they again do it wrong. And using the software, I show the difference between the two. And I say, for all of you who understand this or got them right, you need to get a life, meaning you're probably spending way, way, way too much time studying these obscure little hands. Well, that's how I kind of feel, that most people aren't that skilled. Some are gifted and knowledgeable, like Bob, and can get right very, very close to those true odds. But the bulk of people don't. All they do is become better players overall, and they enjoy the game more. They don't get so good that they bang every pay table up against the optimum.
It's been suggested that I get a life by people other than...
Well, I use you as an example, and I said, get a life, Bob. So
right.
You'll be...
But
you'll
let's not talk about your wife, Bob.
Yeah.
Get a wife? Okay. We briefly mentioned All-Star Poker in the previous show. All-Star or All-Star 2, or there's several permutations on it, has... You can play lots and lots of games. You can play Ultimate X on it. You can play Triple Play. You can play Spin Poker. You can play Super Times Pay or Double Super Times Pay. So there's all these, and so there are hundreds and hundreds of different settings to make on these games. Now, that used to be a rich source for players to capitalize on, simply because there were so many different games, it would take a slot tech a whole day sometimes to program one machine. But he mentioned in the last show that now they have the capability of, they have to set up one machine, but once they get that one machine set up, they can save all their choices on a memory stick and then just plug in that memory stick on the next machine, and then it's set up. Now we're talking about 15 minutes instead of all day to set up the machine, and there's a lot fewer errors for the players to take advantage of. So I can see why that'd be good for a casino, not so good for APs.
There are some advantage players of having this, because those errors that I make, it can go the other way too and be really bad, meaning I wanted to have a 1% progressive, and by mistake they put a 1/10 of progressive, which would not be good for the players. So those errors can go both ways, Bob, and I don't think it's always against the advantage player. Sometimes it benefits him by having a better poker machine out there. And when you get those huge errors, they contribute to bosses and GMs who don't know the industry very well saying, let's get rid of all those. Let's get rid of all those pokers because they lost money this week, and it may have been because of an error. So there are pluses and minuses to that strategy, and it saves labor. It's another automation. It saves labor, and it makes your floor consistent. I think you know that every casino I've worked at has a fair degree of loose pokers, and I'm sitting here telling you that I want that to happen. At Pechanga, when I first implemented that strategy, I told them what I wanted. I went down and set the machines all looser than they'd been before. But I went down on the floor once and started observing players, and I thought, Jesus, these machines aren't anything like what I wanted. And it was errors they'd made. They intended to do it right, and they didn't do it. In that case, the games remained tighter because they weren't consistent. So the All-Star 2 can get them consistent.
See, but as players, knowledgeable players, if you wanted, we can recognize the difference between when you make a mistake in your favor and when you make a mistake in our favor. So
yep.
if you have made it in your favor, then fine, we just skip that one and we'll go on to the next. If you made
yep.
it in our favor, it's time to sit down and play. So
but
most, if it's pay schedule, knowledgeable players can recognize it. When you're talking about the return on progressives of what you wanted, and what you wanted is an unknown, we can measure how fast the progressive goes up, but we don't
yeah,
know
with
what
your knowledge.
Intention was. So,
but who am I really cheating in those cases are the ones that are too tight by mistake. I'm hammering the other half of the player, which is not the advantage player, and I hate taking advantage of him as well.
Well, I don't mind that so much. You need to make your money somewhere so you can have games that I like. So
yep.
that I created groups a long time ago that the casino needs to profit from somebody. And if I'm feeling sorry for everybody who loses, then I would be very miserable in my life. Because, so I've learned to accept that, yep, if you don't know what you're doing, it's a buyer beware atmosphere, and the ones who don't know are on their own.
Well, I think that's why video poker has enjoyed such success. It's a looser than average game for a guy who's trying it for the very first time. If he gets a little bit better, it'll be a little bit better game. And if you want to devote some time, and I think you'll agree you have to devote some money, you can get to be a good player. Well, that's the same strategy that worked for me as a kid when I went to the mall with two quarters and got to play 3 minutes. And over time, those two quarters I could play half an hour because I learned the game, and it made the game very popular with me. That's what I do love about video poker, is it relates to all those audiences. Another parallel I can think of is I like to ride bicycles, and I buy equipment for bicycles. And on a very frequent basis, I go to the bike shop to buy those parts, knowing that I can get a better deal on the Internet. And the reason I do that is so the bike shop won't go out of business. So that if I ever need a little part quickly, it's right down the street instead of waiting for the mailman. I don't mind a little bit of give back to him, as long as it doesn't cost me too much, so I can keep that local bike guy in existence. And what I do with video poker in most every place I work is I have a large selection of very loose machines, a couple of them mid-range. And those mid-range players, when you get a non-knowledgeable player in there, I make more money off him than I would off you, but he's still doing better than non-video poker. And I assume all your listeners know, except for very high-limit machines, almost always your video poker products, even tight ones, are going to be a little bit looser than your real and video products.
Yeah, most of them would understand that. All right, let's change things a little bit. Ultimate X is a very popular video poker game. It costs twice as much as a regular video poker game, but you earn multipliers and for helping on your next hand. Buddy and I were talking about this fairly recently off the air, and he said at a casino he was at, it was a very, very profitable machine, but he talked to a slot director at a casino 25 miles away, and the Ultimate X were just duds for him. So what did you guys conclude on that, Buddy?
Well, as you know, my first Ultimate X products were 5-cent variation games. And I put them in, and I quickly noticed that customers love them, and they played and played and played. But what really shocked me, one of the things that shocked me, in addition to the large amounts of money I was making for a nickel video poker, was my average bets were in the $2 to almost $4 range, average bet per play. And a nickel poker, you're getting a quarter per play. Well, obviously, that was a much higher level. I never thought about that much until that associate of mine at the other casino said no one played his games, and I couldn't understand that. And I realized that he was a value casino. He had more penny slots than most people, a lot of value proposition, a fairly liberal club, not many amenities, no hotel resorts or anything like the Pechanga operation I was with had. And then I
Wait, I'm sorry. Can I stop you for a second, buddy?
Sure.
What does the term value casino mean?
Oh, what I would mean, a value casino, meaning they're focused more on the player in the mid-range to low-budget extremes. He wouldn't have as much money. He would have a reduced number of high-roller customers. South Point may be an example, although they service both with their horse race, their horse people and things like that. But a lot of their
El Cortez would be a value casino.
El Cortez, you know, those kinds of properties.
Where
decent return. They're looking at a lower budget. Their win per device is probably lower than most casinos. And whereas Pechanga, where my Ultimate X, we had an awful high percentage of mid to high range players. And so their budgets for each trip were much, much higher. And Ultimate X, if you play, you know, in that $2 to $4 range, it can be a really fun game. I love certain games that come along, the first triple plays, the first super times pay. And Ultimate X, they do some things in their game strategy that make you feel lucky. I mean, there's ways they have a bit more volatility than regular pokers because you interject this item in. I mean, it's, forgive me for going basic on you, but if I back up to the jacks are better argument and say that when we were doing the early research with the game manufacturers about why video poker was popular, we talked to lots and lots of customers and asked them why they like video pokers, and they said, oh, you know, we love to hit a royal flush. Well, how many do you hit? Is that how you evaluate if you had a good time or not? No, what we really like, and we'd ask them, did you win or lose? Well, I won. What do you mean you won? And they'd usually say, well, I got some four-of-a-kinds. They would cite the number of four-of-a-kinds they got. And so early on, we realized that four-of-a-kind was a real achievable goal, whereas a royal flush was like one of those really lucky things. They didn't plan on getting a royal flush. It was a great thing. But they did register their success in four of a kinds. So obviously bonus poker, and it's, oh my gosh, how many variants are there out today of bonus poker? But we realized that bonus poker, by taking away some of the pay table on the low pays and putting it to the four of a kinds, really hit the sweet spot of players' imagination. Well, then along came Ernie Moody with triple play, which Bob and I have had many discussions of this over the time. When you first see triple play, it just seems like too good to be true. My gosh, if I get dealt a straight flush, I got three times the odds. And for the longest time, when I put a progressive on that or something, I would think, oh my God, how am I going to do the math to figure out this? Because if a guy hits royal flush, he's going to get all three progressives this month. And then after meeting with the math guys and talking with Bob and everything, I realized it's exactly the same as three poker machines all in one. Your losses are three times bigger. Your wins are three times bigger. Bottom line, it's just like playing three machines at once. There was no difference. But the mental psychological effect it had was amazing. And we got a lot of people to play bad odds. Good skilled players would make bad decisions at first till they finally came to the realization. So any game that can give you this feeling that something better is going to happen, well, Ultimate X really does it in a neat way. When you get that multiplier, it just enthuses you like you couldn't believe. You don't realize that you don't always get the multiplier and the pay table is not always that rich, but it just gives you some excitement to the game. So Ultimate X is one of those rare games that came along that adds a new element. I was surprised that it's still the top performer in many, many casinos around. Triple Play that I mentioned earlier had about a three-year run before it settled down to be average, and now it's a staple in the industry. It's an option on almost every game. But that sort of myth that it was so much better lasted for about 2 to 3 years, and Ultimate X is about there now. So I don't know if Bob has an opinion about how much longer it remained popular. But the big thing I saw was that you have to have a little bit better budget to play it. If you're a smaller player with a limited budget, it's probably not your favorite game.
What about, did you have problems with attracting the scavengers who just run around and look for leftover multipliers on the game?
Oh, I'm glad you brought that up. I have talked to every single slot manufacturer about this. There's a group we call Bonus Chasers or whatever, and there were several slot games out. One of the earliest ones was called Diamond Mind. As you played the game, little diamonds dropped over to the side, and if you played it quite a while, the diamonds would fill up and you'd win a big bonus. Well, the game was wonderful. We thought that was just great. And then we noticed that I won't call them advantage players. We call them fleas or deadbeats or whatever you want to call it. They would come up and, forgive my language, they would light a cigar or fart on the player or make disgusting noise or just stand there and be rude when they saw that diamond cash filling up to get the player off so they could jump on that. So those are the kinds of things in gaming that we really dislike, because our players who built up the jackpots were not getting the advantage of it. Wonderful thing about Ultimate X is they're called persistence bonuses in our industry when you do that, when you work time to build up something and then get a reward. What's so beautiful about Ultimate X is those persistence bonuses are only 3 hands. Unless they keep coming. What I mean is, if you got a huge 12x multiplier, you can play that off in 3. So I don't care if a guy's farting on you or whatever. If you've got that bonus, you'll play it off and then you'll leave. So to me, it was the perfect blend of a persistence bonus, which is achievable, but couldn't be taken advantage of as much by unscrupulous players as the other ones.
Well, I just remember I was playing in a place, and there was an Ultimate X next to me, and about every 10 minutes, now this was in a downtown casino in Las Vegas, so, you know, there are a number of fleas out there, and every 10 minutes they would come by and scroll through the Ultimate X, all of the different games, to see if somebody had walked away from a multiplier, even on the 5-cent denomination. And when the guy started scrolling through the nickels, I looked at it and I was like, really? Really? You're doing this for nickels? Like, I don't know. It just, I found it annoying, but I'm sure for the casino it's even more annoying.
Well, hopefully everybody knows what the term flea is, but a small bloodsucker. What it is, they're just looking for small advantage. And if someone's dumb enough to walk away with a really nice multiplier on there, Bob will tell you that if your multiplier's there, you have pretty good odds, you know, so they would walk around and look.
Yeah.
I do that on a lot of games. So if someone's foolish enough to do it, but what I found with Ultimate X, hardly ever or very rarely do many players walk away with a good multiplier, because it only takes 2 more hands to play it. And we'd often see people reaching back in their wallet just to get beyond that even though they were leaving, to get beyond that good multiplier that was on the screen. So I think it's a perfect balance of being a short-term goal that's achievable versus those games I described earlier where you had to play for 20 or 30 or 40 minutes to have a chance at achieving that persistence bonus.
All right. I definitely have some comments on Ultimate X, and I'm going to share them with you as soon as we come back from commercials.
Great.
The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anybody else has. In March, the major promotion is for players who already have slot club cards and receive mailers. This promotion is ending now. We've talked about it for several weeks, so next week we'll tell you about the promotions for April. As of this week, the South Point is offering a -105 VIG on all March Madness games, sides only. Does not apply to the NIT, CBI, or CIT games. They will take up to $10,000 in person at the book, or up to $5,000 on the South Point app. The last class in the current 10-week semester of free video poker classes will be on Wednesday, March 29th at noon in the Silverado Lounge. This lounge is the first one you come to when entering from the parking garage. The class is What Video Poker Players Should Know About Slot Clubs. Understanding and taking advantage of slot clubs is every bit as important as playing the hands correctly. The class covers the main differences in slot clubs and how different players should be looking for different benefits. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the Gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. The game of the week is Split Card. This is a 10 coin per line game where periodically you receive a split card, either on the deal or on the draw, but never both. A split card is any card in the deck paired with equal probability with either the card directly higher than it, directly lower than it, or a duplicate card. For example, if you got the 5 of clubs as a split card, you'll either see the 4 of clubs, the 5 of clubs, or the 6 of clubs with it. Normal pay schedule categories are there, except you receive 5,000 coins for 5 of a kind. The frequency of the split card is set so that the return on the game with perfect play is slightly higher than the return for the 5-coin version of the same game.
We're talking to Buddy Frank, slot director, for a number of years. And we were talking about Ultimate X. One of the things Buddy said was wrong. I want to clarify that. On Ultimate X, if you're playing triple plays, 5-play or 10-play, if there's any multiplier at all, you have an advantage. Even if it's 10-play and one of the lines has a 2x multiplier, that's a that gives you a 10% edge. But no matter how bad the pay schedule is, assuming it's above 90%, you have the advantage. On one hand, you can play 5 coins per line. That will take advantage of every multiplier, cash them all out, and leave and not build any more. It does not take 3 hands to run off a Ultimate X multiplier. It takes 1. And you do
if
that
you win,
by
right?
betting. No, 5 coins per hand.
Oh, okay.
You have
I understand.
Used up all the multipliers. There's just none that exist anymore. So, so when you're done playing, just play one more, and that way you play at the strategy for the regular game, not the Ultimate X game. Ultimate X strategy is considerably different than regular video poker. One of the small disadvantages is, well, I wanted to play until my credits got to exactly $200 or such number. Well, you always have that one hand of 5x, of 5 coins to play at the end, and you don't know what the results are going to be. So you're going to end up at 198.75 or 203, whatever it is. So that's a relatively minor deal. They do have a new game from videopoker.com, one of our sponsors. It's a variation on Ultimate X called Ultimate X Bonus Streak, where you get hands and sometimes you earn a multiplier for 3 or 4 subsequent hands. And there's no way to play them off except by playing them off. And so almost always when you leave, you're going to leave multipliers. So fleas who are out there for that will get these multipliers. But they will also be leaving multipliers when they leave. You cannot just bet 5 coins per line and cash out all the multipliers.
Oh, that'll drive them absolutely berserk.
Yeah, so I don't know how that's going to get cut and dried, because I don't think so. If it's a lot of multipliers, well then yeah, you could play a few hands, but there's no time to leave. You have to stay forever. And that's kind of against the philosophy of a flea. So so we'll just...
Maybe it's a flea redemption program, Bob.
Flea redemption. That's a nice idea. Okay. So we mentioned earlier that we're going to have Buddy on again. We're going to talk to him about what our listeners want to talk about. And so we invite you to send in your questions to us. The last thing I want to ask Buddy was not on the script today. but he mentioned it in passing 20 minutes ago, and I'm not going to let him go without following up on it. It has to do with double up, where double up is if you have a winning hand of sometimes a certain size, sometimes any hand, you can choose to go double or nothing on a fair bet. It's whether you get twice a jackpot or nothing at all. And so, Buddy, you said you had some opinions on that.
Well, I like to turn double up off, but I certainly offer all our players the right, if they request it, to turn it on. And this may sound crazy, but the reason I do that is I want to protect the player. And you would say, how is that protecting the player? In case your listeners don't know, I'm sure they do. Double up is true odds, meaning it's like flipping a coin. It's 50-50. There's no advantage to the house, no advantage to the player. And I mentioned flipping a coin. When players ask me about that, especially ones who aren't too knowledgeable, I say it's kind of like flipping a coin and playing double or nothing. There's a big difference if you're playing against your friend versus you're playing against Bill Gates, meaning he's got an inherent advantage because if he keeps doing it, he's going to win because his budget will allow him to do that. And when you're playing against the casino, for all intents and purposes, we have an unlimited bankroll. So it's, again, if you just have that feeling that I'm the luckiest man in the world today and I can win like crazy, certainly call over the casino manager and see if he'll turn double up or double down up for you. And they will probably do that. I just don't think it's a good idea. And I can't tell you how many disputes I've had after they've lost that, had a big win and they lost. They just feel really deflated. They never call me when they win, but they certainly call me a lot when they lose. And so I just didn't think it's a good deal for the customer because we have an advantage by having that longer, that bigger budget. Odds-wise, it's identical. And there's no downside to the casino in doing that. Drunks win big amounts of money. But there's really, on a 50-50 bet, it's just like marking time. And to me, it's like a push on a blackjack game. Bob, your comments?
Buddy. Yeah, I think you came to the right decision for you as a slot director, but I think you had the wrong reason. Or at least there's another reason that goes hand in hand in that. And that is, if you're a casino manager and your games are, say, 97% on, and you offer double up, mm-hmm. and players play just as much time on the double up machine, or they double up regularly, when they're doubling up, they're playing 100% game. So in
yes.
2 hours of gambling, these players are now playing a 98% game or 98.5% game because, as far as they're concerned, they're still gambling when they're doubling up. So as far as a casino's concerned, if the casino, if they're willing to play a 97% game, why would you give them one hand on a 97% game and the next hand on a 100% game if they're willing to play the 97% game regularly?
Because it would give them more time on device, which is good for the casino.
Okay.
Well, 50% of the time it would.
Yeah, it'll definitely give them more time on device. You are going to get the winning hand. But, so for a fixed amount of time,
I mean, I think it's better for the casino if players last longer on the game. You know, I think they're going to lose their, whatever their fixed amount of money is. And if you can extend the amount of playing time they get for that amount of money, I think that's good for the casino. The other thing that I think is good for both the player and the casino is, boy, if I hit a $1,200 or a $1,500 payoff and I have the option of doubling up so that half the time I don't have to wait for a W2G, boy, I would rather do that. And that would be good for the casino as well. Half the W2Gs and, less time wasted. So that's why I like to double up.
Two other wrinkles I've seen on that, too, is sometimes if someone has a $600 payout, or let's just say an $800 payout, many people have the mistaken feeling that if they doubled up, they would not have to pay the W-2G because they won two $800 bets. Instead. The law doesn't read that way. It says for one wager, what's the total outcome? So they end up paying taxes both ways. We used to have this argument with Triple Play early on, and the IRS was quite clear. The last thing, Bob, is I do have the ability to limit the number of times they can double up. And again, you can set that at once, I think up to a max. Well, I think the max is unlimited if you choose to, but I've never seen a casino go much beyond five times doubling up.
There are promotions where double up makes sense for a player.
Yep, I can imagine.
There are promotions where you get advantages for having WTGs that outweigh the disadvantages. On a personal basis, I hate double up. I'm not on the machine unless the game plus the slot club points plus the promotions plus the mailers, that kind of thing, adds up to over 100%. So why on earth would I want a lousy 100% game? And so it's just a waste of time because the double up does not give you slot club points. Whereas regular hands do give you slot club points and the benefits that come with playing. So on a personal basis, I hate it because every time I win, you have to hit the button saying, you know, do you want a double up? No.
You should be able to turn that off. I mean, I've played on machines that have the double up, but you don't have to answer that question every time. It's just one of the buttons is there if you want it.
Sometimes that's the option. Sometimes you have to do it every time.
I can see where that would be a pain in the ass.
One other thing, and it's a myth I've had for a long time, Bob, and I'd love you to straighten me out on that. When you're playing in a video poker tournament, a short duration tournament, I've always said turn double up on because it seems like the winner is the guy who's always doubling up and he's just lucky versus good. Do you have any feelings on that?
I've never seen that. That would be interesting. In most video poker tournaments, they're based on double-double bonus. And so the winners are the ones who get four aces and a kicker, you know, and or royals. And if you get neither of those, you're not winning today. I've never seen double up on a tournament, especially if it was a game where a type of tournament where you had 10 minutes to play as many hands as you could. And every time you had to hit no or yes or something. That would really cut down on
your time
to play. So obviously there's a strategy there. Probably when you got any four of a kind, you would try to double up two or three times to try to get into the winning category. Perhaps it's not obvious. I haven't really thought out the strategy for that. It would be interesting. Anyway, it's always a pleasure talking to you, buddy.
I've enjoyed it.
And we actually had a few more questions, and we've already well over the hour. So we're saving some of these for next time. Hope our listeners will send in some new questions, and so we can do this again. Buddy, it was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Bob. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you, Richard. And go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.